So we'll think about the story now. If you look at the different examples we've thought of injustice, things that are unfair that happen, sometimes there are situations in the world where we tend to say it's unfair, but it's nobody's fault really, like earthquakes killing thousands of people. Nobody did that, so we can't blame anybody, but we still tend to say, well, that's not fair. It's not fair that somebody should have suffered that, and not fair that some people suffer it and others don't. It doesn't seem to be right. It doesn't seem to be shared out very fairly. So there are quite a lot of things like that, where we say, well, this is not fair, because some misfortunes happened to us or to somebody else. But there are quite a lot of those things that we've thought of that are somebody's fault. And you can see who's to blame for that injustice. And it's often it's a matter of somebody misusing power, like those dictators creaming off the money from their countries. And so that's really a good intro to this story, because that's exactly what's happening here, isn't it? It's a dictator throwing his weight around, demanding something, and exploiting one of his countrymen. And Ahab starts off by asking Naboth if he can have his vineyard. And to start with, when the story starts, it looks as if, well, this might be a fairly reasonable request. The vineyard is near to his palace, near to his vegetable garden, so it's obvious that he could actually make use of it. He could bring it into his own property. And he does actually offer the other guy a reasonable payment, or he says, I'll get you a better vineyard, if you like, in exchange. But notice, quite an important point, in what Ahab says to Naboth, he doesn't use the word please. There's no hint here that it's a request. He doesn't say, please let me have your vineyard. He says, let me have your vineyard. It's an order, not a request. It is a big, powerful man throwing his weight around. And we've mentioned Gaddafi. I couldn't resist finding a nice picture of Muammar Gaddafi. Come out all right, good. And he looks a bit fearsome, doesn't he? And we've heard a lot about his exploits recently. And it's a good parallel, really, I think. This is the way that Ahab behaved. He threw his weight around, egged on by his wife Jezebel, and he didn't expect anybody to argue with him. I'm reading a book at the moment, and it's the book that TV series during the autumn, Pillars of the Earth, was based on. It's set in the 12th century, and it's a very interesting, detailed account of life in this country in the 12th century, and the lords of the manor, and the serfs, and the people. And I came across a phrase, I think it was just yesterday when I was reading it, and the phrase is droit de seigneur. Anybody know what droit de seigneur means? Pardon? The right of the Lord. That's what it literally means, that's right, yes. It's in French, because the Normans were French. And it basically means that the lord of the manor has the right to sleep with a woman on her wedding day, before her husband. Now, if that isn't a case of throwing your weight around, I don't know what is. I don't know how often it was actually implemented, but occasionally these Norman barons put that into practice, and they said it was their right to do that. And that's what Ahab thought. It's my right to have this guy's vineyard. Who is he to argue with me? Now, I wonder, just stop and think for a minute, what would you have done if you'd been in this situation? If the king had come to you with this demand, I won't call it a request, it's a demand, what would you have done? I think what I would have done is granted his request. Discretion being the better part of valour, I think I'd have done what he asked. But Naboth courageously refused. Now, I don't think Naboth was being deliberately awkward. I don't think he was being an awkward so-and-so just for the sake of it. I think he was probably mindful of the fact that in the Old Testament law, the law of Moses, the people were told that they should not give away their land because every Israelite shall keep the tribal land inherited from his forefathers. And they thought that was quite an important principle. They didn't want the land to be all split up and moved around between different owners. They wanted these tribal units of land to be kept intact. And so I should think Naboth probably had this law in mind. But Ahab and Jezebel weren't bothered about the law of God, the law of Yahweh. Probably at this stage much more influenced by the laws and the customs of Baal and Ashtaroth, which Jezebel had persuaded Ahab to adopt. But anyway, Naboth says, no, you can't. You can't have it. And then the next thing that happens is quite sweet, really. Ahab went home sullen and angry, and he sulked. Ah, poor Ahab. But he wasn't left in that state very long because Jezebel came to the rescue. And it kind of gives you an insight, I think, this, into the relationship between Ahab and Jezebel. Ahab is probably inclined to just back down and give up. Not Jezebel. She's not having that. Can we have the next slide on? See what Jezebel has to say. Get up and eat. I'll get you the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite. It's a bit like a kind of sulky teenager, and his mum comes to kind of look after him, isn't it? Don't worry, lad, you know, you stay there, sit on the settee, watch the telly for a bit, and I'll go and sort it for you. I'll get you out of this one. Jezebel is obviously stronger and more resolute than Ahab. She's also more cruel. She's also more tyrannical. You remember what she said to Elijah after the contest on Mount Carmel? Jezebel said, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them, one of those prophets of Baal that has just been killed. It's not Ahab that said that, it's Jezebel that said that. She's the stronger of the two. And so off she goes to arrange for Naboth to be killed. That reminds me of what David did when he wanted to marry Bathsheba. And he arranged for Bathsheba's husband to be killed so that he could take his wife. In both cases, it was so that a powerful ruler could grab what he wanted. There's no hint in this story that the elders and the nobles of Jezreel questioned Jezebel's orders. I suppose they knew what was good for them. Hearing how she proposed to deal with Naboth, no one was really prepared to put his head above the parapet. And then, look how Ahab does what he's told by his wife. She says, get up and take possession of the vineyard of Naboth the Jezreelite. I've sorted it out. He's dead. You can have the vineyard. People in positions of power and authority, as we were thinking just now, people like Gaddafi, sometimes think that they're above the law and that they don't need to obey it. There was a philosopher once called Nietzsche who wrote a book called Übermann und Superman, Übermann rather, and in English it's Superman. And Nietzsche's thesis was that if a man is important enough, he doesn't need to worry about ordinary morality. A Napoleon, for example, because he strides across the stage of the world, he can do things that an ordinary man can't do. That's what Nietzsche said. Now, Hitler was greatly influenced by Nietzsche's teachings, as you can well imagine. And these two, Ahab and Jezebel, seem to have thought the same kind of way. But God is a God of justice. And Elijah comes onto the scene now. And there's a nice picture of Elijah telling them off, Ahab and Jezebel. And he issues these fearsome threats to the two of them. God is a God of justice. And Elijah bravely made clear to Ahab and Jezebel that they were going to have to answer to God for what they had done. Both of them. Ahab, the threat to Ahab, in the place where dogs licked up Naboth's blood, dogs will lick up your blood. Yes, yours. I don't know how Elijah gets away with these things, really. You'd think he'd get struck down straight away by the soldiers. But they must have been a bit afraid of him. And then this threat to Jezebel is even worse. Ahab's blood is going to be licked up by the dogs. But Elijah says, it's not just the blood, but Jezebel herself is going to be eaten by dogs. And that's a pretty fearsome threat, isn't it? Well, what do you think of these two? We haven't quite finished their story, because Peter's going to finish it off next week. But the compiler of this history has a verdict on them, which we read in verses 25 and 26. There was never a man like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the eyes of the Lord, urged on by Jezebel his wife. He behaved in the vilest manner by going after idols like the Amorites the Lord drove out before Israel. So that's what the compiler of this history thought of them. But then we get this surprising ending to this chapter, chapter 21. Ahab repents. When Ahab heard these words, he tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and fasted. He lay in sackcloth and went around meekly. I don't know how genuine his repentance was. It's anybody's guess, really. After all, the author, the compiler of this history, who's just told us that, has just finished telling us that Ahab's the worst person that you've ever thought of in history. So he must have not thought it was a genuine repentance. People sometimes make a show of repentance just to avoid punishment, but they're not really sorry. Their heart hasn't really changed. But however skeptical we may be about Ahab's repentance, the Lord actually told Elijah that the punishment that had been declared was going to be modified. And this is the last slide. Because he has humbled himself, I will not bring this disaster on his day, but I will bring it on his house in the days of his son. And I'm not going to tell you how that worked out, because that would be stealing Peter's thunder. But next week, you'll find out how the two of them met their sticky ends.